From KLW News in San Francisco, this is Cross Currents, context, culture, and connection from around the Bay Area.
South San Francisco.
Downtown.
ATL.
Pittsburgh.
P-World.
Oakland.
Corona Heights, San Francisco.
Coming up, some of San Francisco's young people are getting a free ride.
People are like, we should make free muni for young people. And we thought it was never possible, but, as evidenced by today, it is something that is possible.
We'll also hear what life's like for one young man who's struggling with his own financial situation.
So I'm supposed to talk about how I feel about my financial situation. I feel horrible.
And we'll spend time in the shoes of a woman on the front lines of our immigration battle.
A lawyer is supposed to defend people, advocate for people, not try to rob them.
What we need to live life and just to get by. Stay with us for Cross Currents. If you've ridden Muni in the past few days, you might have noticed a lot of young people hopping on. They're tagging their Clipper cards like everyone else, but they're not spending any money. Last Friday was the first day of a pilot program called Free Muni for Youth. It aims to make life a little easier for the city's low and moderate income families by offering their kids free transportation. The city estimates that 40,000 young people qualify for the program. Here to give us the details is KALW's Isabel Angel.
So Free Muni for Youth is a new program. It's a pilot started by San Francisco that offers free unlimited Muni rides to youth, kids who are between the ages of 5 and 17. And their families have to make at or below the Bay Area median income.
And what is the Bay Area median income?
It's actually kind of higher than you would expect. It's about $82,000 for a family of two a year.
That's the median income in the Bay Area. Okay, so how does somebody apply for this?
Right. To apply, you just go online and you can fill out an application. They've also been handing them out in schools to all the kids in schools. And you just need to provide your proof of age. You don't need to provide your income because, you know, some people with immigration issues or, you know, if they're paid under the table or something, it's hard to provide that. But you do need to provide your proof of age. And in order to ride the bus for free, you have to have a Clipper card. And when you get on the bus to ride for free, you still have to tick it off. So you either have to apply for a Clipper card or you already have one and it just transmits your free rides to that. The reason why it's so important to these young people in San Francisco is because there's been so many cuts to the yellow school bus services by the San Francisco Unified School District that for a lot of kids, Muni is their only way to get to school. Youth Muni Pass costs $22 a month, and for some families, for a lot of families, that's just one extra thing that they really can't afford. And so Paul Munge Rodriguez is a legislative aide for the San Francisco Youth Commission, and he explains why, you know, it's important for these kids to have this free Muni.
We've seen a dramatic reduction in the yellow bus services that the school is providing. So those are already taxpayer funded services that are being rolled back. So essentially it's almost like a reallocation, still investing in the same types of services, but just through a different source of funding.
And you just heard from Paul Munge Rodriguez, who's a legislative aide for the San Francisco Youth Commission. You're listening to Cross Currents. I'm Holly Kernan, and I'm here with Isabel Angel, who's the KALW's transportation reporter, and she's explaining Free Muni for Youth. So who have been the major players in trying to get free Muni for young people?
It's actually been mostly the young people in San Francisco. They've been organized. They've been working through the San Francisco Youth Commission, which is a group of 17 young people who live in San Francisco who have been appointed by the mayor and work to advise the mayor on youth-related issues. So this is one big thing that they've really been working on. They've also gotten a lot of help from advocacy groups like POWER, which stands for People Organized to Win Employment Rights. And I went to this press conference last week where they also had the superintendent of the San Francisco Unified School District, the head...
That's Richard Carranza.
Mm-hmm. And Ed Reskin, who's the head of the San Francisco Municipal Transportation Agency, and also some of the city supervisors who've worked to get this passed. And they all talked about how it just took a collaboration of everyone from the MTA to the school district to the supervisors to get this passed. And they were all just so in awe of the young people and how well organized they were and how through hardships and through it looked like they weren't going to get it, they still kept fighting for it. And that's really what made the difference for this Free Youth from Muni program.
And you interviewed Nick Persky, who's one of the young people who worked to make Free Muni for Youth a reality.
Yeah, Nick Persky is the vice chair of the San Francisco Youth Commission, and he talked about how this was born.
this has been something that's been, you know, happening for almost a decade now. It started in a small room, just, you know, a couple pieces of pizza, and people are like, we should make free Muni for young people. And we thought it was never possible, but, you know, as evidenced by today, it is something that is possible.
That's Nick Persky. He is the vice chair of the San Francisco Youth Commission, which is a group of 17 young people who advise the mayor on youth-related issues, and they were instrumental in getting Free Muni for Youth started. And let's hear again from Nick Persky.
It's pretty special to be a person in high school, a person who is unable to vote, to be able to see what young people can do to, you know, bring policy change in our local government. And I think it not only is this Free Muni for Youth a great thing, but it's going to open the door for a lot more things that young people can do in San Francisco.
Again, that's Nick Persky, who is a vice chair of the San Francisco Youth Commission. You're listening to Cross Currents. I'm Holly Kernan, and here with me is Isabel Angel, who's KALW's transportation reporter, and she's explaining Free Muni for Youth to us.
Parents were also big in this fight for Free Muni for Youth, this program that's giving 40,000 kids in San Francisco Free Muni. Claudia Gonzalez is a mother of two from Potrero Hill, and she remembers the fight as a really difficult ordeal and a really long process.
It was a very stressful process. I remember going to these hearings and I felt very betrayed by the MTA board, because we would go in front of them and tell them about how difficult it was for us, and they would look away, they wouldn't answer us, they wouldn't give us a straight answer, and that was a very, very arduous process for us. It was hard.
That's parent Claudia Gonzalez, who's a mother of two from Potrero Hill, and she's talking about Free Muni for Youth. So how did this program finally get passed, Isabel?
It started about 2 years ago, this campaign in earnest, and last year the MTA, if they got this certain grant, they would fund a 22-month pilot program of this same program. But the grant was rejected by the Metropolitan Transportation Commission in July. So it was a big blow to the advocates and the young people who were trying to get this passed. It didn't look like it was going to happen. But in the fall, a new grant surfaced, and Ed Riskin, the head of the SFMTA, decided that he was going to allocate $1.6 million to fund a shorter program, so 16-month pilot program. At this press conference, Riskin said that it was a hard decision because Muni has a lot of problems, a lot of infrastructure issues. He said the system has needs, but the community has needs too. So in this instance, he decided to go with the people.
But the battle is not over. This is just a pilot program that will last for 16 months.
Right. So supporters of Free Youth for Muni say now the fight is to make this a permanent program, make it last beyond the 16 months, so that the kids who are going to be relying on these free rides are going to be able to still get to school, get to their jobs, and aren't going to be left out in the cold.
Isabel Angel is KALW's transportation reporter. You can find more of her work online at transportationnation.org. You're listening to Cross Currents from KALW News. I'm Holly Kernan. For many young people, even finding a few dollars for bus fare can be a huge hardship. 21-year-old Joshua Williams knows how that feels. We meet Josh in this next installment of our series Money Diaries, in which young people from Oakland reflect on their relationships with money. For reasons he'll reveal, Josh spends a lot of time walking and discovering parts of the city he's never seen, even though they're just a few miles from his home. Here's Josh.
That's pretty cool. I didn't know there was a restaurant over here. It's called the Lake Chalet over here, near the docks, near the lake. That's pretty cool. It's filled with people enjoying meals and looking out at the lake. Nice full moon. It's legit. I like that.
This is Joshua Williams. I'm unemployed. I'm on food stamps. I've been homeless on and off since September. my relationship with my mother could be a bit better, which probably may make my living situation a bit more stable. Sometimes I may have to go to a friend's house for a few days, and sometimes I'm just walking around.
So I'm supposed to talk about how I feel about my financial situation. I feel horrible. I mean, who would be happy about having no money, no stable living situation, having to go to the grocery store and pay for your groceries with EBT, and then still not have enough? It's actually pretty horrible. There's actually a lot of things from the grocery store I can't get, like toilet paper, paper towels, plates. I can't get any of that stuff. I have to get food only, and cold food at that. Food that you need a oven to prepare or a microwave, and I may not always have that. So I'm stuck eating junk food when I'm not at a house. And that's not a good feeling. I weigh 300 pounds. I don't need more junk food. I need less junk food. I can't eat healthy if I don't have a place to prepare the healthy food. It also don't feel okay to not have a job, and all your other friends have jobs or some way of getting money. And when they all go to hang out and eat food, you have to ask them for money to pay for your meal. It doesn't feel good at all. Sometimes I just don't even hang out with them. I just go on my own separate way and talk to them the next day. It's just something I've had to deal with for quite some time. It doesn't feel nice. It feels very bad. Hopefully all that'll change. I applied for a job and I'm expected to go to an interview tomorrow. Hopefully that'll be okay.
So, just got out of an interview, and I decided to walk home. But I'm coming up on the Lake Chalet, and last time I was here, I didn't know where I was going to be sleeping because of problems. Things are getting better, so I hope one day I can actually go here, try out one of their dishes, see how good this place really is. That's been it for now. Talk to you later. Peace.
That piece comes to us from independent producer Lisa Morehouse and Game Theory Academy. They're a financial education program for young adults. You can find out more about them at klw.org. And stay tuned for more Money Diaries in the coming weeks. This is Cross Currents. I'm Holly Kernan. A free ride is nice, but it doesn't always make riding the bus easy. Jessica Ron is a senior at San Francisco's Washington High School. She describes this experience on Muni.
Like many Chinese American immigrant children, I would sometimes have a cultural identity crisis in which I am in a sense of loss. At times, I am the American-born Chinese, aka ABC, who speaks fluent English, who has Western ideas or goes out with friends for weekend lunch. Other times, I am the Chinese immigrant that speaks sentences of Cantonese and Mandarin, studious and shy. I switch identities according to my surroundings. With family, I'm more Chinese. With general people, more American. Close friends who have similar backgrounds, I am both and the happiest. On the inside, I have internal conflicts. On the outside, I'm pressured to act and behave a certain way and criticized for not being American or Chinese enough. I was openly criticized by strangers on the bus just because of my skin color and appearance. Caucasians, I remember, would constantly ask if I can read the signs in English that says, "You are to give your seat up to the elderly and disabled." Due to their stares and harsh tone, I always give up the seat, despite the fact the person wasn't considered elderly. They were middle-aged, and I shouldn't have to vacate a seat that wasn't purposely designed for wheelchair users and the elderly. Their talks don't stop there. They continue on and on with racial comments, degrading my other culture and its people. They are ill-mannered, can't speak proper English, therefore a waste of money to educate. They should all return back to China. I wanted to scream so bad. "I can hear you, and I do understand. We are the same. Your family used to be immigrants, so don't tell me that I should return back to China and have no right to live here. But I never do, because it will only bring embarrassment and shame to me."
You'll find a link to that piece and all of our youth commentaries at our website. It's kalw.org. You're listening to Cross Currents. I'm Holly Kernan. As the draconian budget cuts known as the sequester go into effect nationwide, government agencies, large and small, are looking for ways to save money. One result is that in the past few days, the government has released hundreds of immigrants from the country's many detention centers. The immigrants aren't being released from the legal system, however. They still need to appear in court. But the government doesn't provide attorneys for non-citizens. So if they want lawyers, they have to find them themselves. Many agencies provide free legal services to immigrants in these situations. But the agencies are overwhelmed. And even immigrants who can afford an attorney have to be careful who they hire, because some unlicensed practitioners see them as easy money. In this piece from our archives, reporter Jude Joffe Block looks at the risks of seeking legal help. And a note to our listeners, we aren't using the full names of undocumented immigrants in this story.
It's a recent evening in San Francisco's Mission District. More than a dozen Latin American immigrants are sitting around a big table talking about immigration reform. This is a monthly meeting of the community group, Comité de Padres Unidos, Parents United. That's one of the participants, Rosa. She's wearing a gold cross and her salt and pepper hair is pulled back in a tight ponytail. She's pointing out that illegal immigration is technically a civil violation, not a criminal offense. It's a topic she knows something about. In 1989, Rosa and her husband illegally crossed the border from Mexico. They made a life in the Bay Area, and they're raising four children here. For years, they managed to avoid encounters with immigration authorities. But now they're facing a deportation order. The trouble began 10 years ago, when they went to a lawyer who claimed he could help them legalize their status.
This lawyer was recommended by other people, but we never looked into whether they actually got residency.
The lawyer's name was Walter Pineda. Rosa says as soon as they found out about him, she and her husband went to his office in Redwood City, hoping he could help them. What they didn't realize was that it's rare to gain legal status without a sponsoring relative or employer, which they didn't have. But Rosa says Pineda assured them they would succeed.
That was the promise. He said if you have been here for 10 years, you don't have a criminal record, and you have children who were born here, you'll get your residency within 1 year.
Rosa says she and her husband paid Pineda $10,000 to do the paperwork for them and their oldest daughter, the only one of their children who is not a U.S. citizen. Even though the family was from Mexico, a country where few people flee political or religious persecution, Pineda told them to file asylum applications. But when they were summoned to immigration court, things started to go wrong.
We went to court, but the lawyer never showed up. He just sent his assistant. And the assistant only spoke English, not Spanish.
And since they weren't really fleeing persecution in Mexico, their asylum claim was denied. The judge started the deportation process. Rosa says Pineda tried to argue that the family should be allowed to stay, but that failed too. Afterwards, Rosa says, Pineda told her that for another fee, on top of the $10,000, he would appeal the case. At that point, Rosa and her husband refused. They wanted out, but the damage was done.
All the lawyer did was just put us in deportation proceedings.
In fact, court records suggest that was Pineda's plan, to put his clients in deportation proceedings on purpose and then try to argue for the cancellation of their deportation. But it's a strategy that rarely works.
It's really a bait-and-switch operation where they get applicants to file the asylum application, which then triggers deportation proceedings.
Dan Torres is an attorney with the Immigrant Legal Resource Center. He says what happened to Rosa's family is a familiar ploy.
The applicants are charged thousands of dollars just to lose at the end of the day. And that's really the tragedy here.
Of course, anyone in this country illegally can be deported. But Rosa and her husband hired Pineda because they wanted to legitimize their status here. If Pineda had been upfront about his risky strategy, Rosa says, she wouldn't have gone along with his plan.
A lawyer is supposed to defend people, advocate for people, not try to rob them.
Rosa's friends who recommended Pineda have already been deported, and they're not the only ones. The scam Pineda used was once so common that it has its own name, the 10-year benefit scam. That particular maneuver is less prevalent these days, but new scams are constantly emerging. Nora Privatera, another attorney from the Immigrant Legal Resource Center, says with immigration reform on the national agenda, the problem is likely to increase.
As soon as something hits the news, these people are out there recruiting victims. We've seen a lot of scams about sign up for the new amnesty, get yourself on the waiting list, pay us, you know, $3,000 to get on the waiting list. And of course, there is no new amnesty.
In many ways, Privatera says, immigrants are easy prey for those who want to make a quick buck.
It's really easy for them to be fooled. They don't understand the applications. They don't know what's said. And a lot of times they're asked to sign things that they haven't a clue what it is.
Because immigrant clients are so vulnerable, immigration law is known for attracting a higher proportion of unethical practitioners, says John Steele, an expert in legal ethics who has taught at Stanford and UC Berkeley.
Although there's a lot of terrific immigration lawyers, it's probably the single field where you hear the most complaints about frauds, shoddy lawyering, and even non-lawyers supposedly practicing the law.
In the 25 years that Walter Pineda was practicing law here, dozens of his clients filed complaints about him with the California State Bar. After an investigation, the bar accused him of a, quote, despicable and far-reaching pattern of misconduct and sought his disbarment. Pineda denied any wrongdoing, but resigned in 2006 with charges pending. We tried to get Pineda's comment for this report, but he didn't return our calls. Even though Pineda can no longer practice law here, Rosa says she doesn't feel the punishment was harsh enough.
He took advantage of people's innocence in order to steal from them. Not money, but the ability to be with their families.
Pineda repeated his questionable legal strategy in court over and over, but no judge or clerk ever formally complained to the state bar. It was only the buildup of clients' complaints over the years that drove the bar to go after Pineda's license. Relying on clients to come forward can be problematic. Many victims are reluctant to speak up for fear of being deported, or they can't tell their story because they're already gone. As for Rosa, she's still in this country, but she's not sure for how long. She and her husband have hired a new attorney, and they're still fighting their case. Now she has some advice for others.
Es mejor consultar con varios abogados.
It's better to consult with various attorneys so they can advise you properly and you won't wind up in the same situation that I'm in.
In San Francisco, I'm Jude Jaffe Block for Cross Currents.
Since we first aired that piece, a few things have changed. Dan Torres is now program director at the California Rural Legal Assistance. Nora Privatera is recently retired from the Immigration Legal Resource Center. And we want to know what you think about the country's immigration issues and how to solve them. Give us a call at 415-264-7106 and just leave us a message with your thoughts on immigration reform or your own story of coming to the U.S. as an immigrant. The number to leave a message is 415-264-7106, and we'll try to feature your voice on the air. And that's it for today's Cross Currents from KLW News. Our team includes Isabel Angel, Hana Baba, Julie Kane, Leela Day, Audrey Dilling, Erica Mu, Ava Sansan, Seth Samuel, Judy Silber, Raisu Sussman, Stephen Short, Brooke Welty, and Mary Willis. Today's show was engineered by Chris Hoff. Casey Miner is our senior editor. Our managing editor is Martina Castro. Ben Trefney is our executive editor. And also thanks to City CarShare for providing an alternative transportation option for our reporters. City CarShare is online at citycarshare.org. Also, thanks to you. We are listener-supported radio. What you're hearing now are the sounds of Destiny Muhammad, also known as the Harpist from the Hood. She's part of a supergroup taking part in this year's International Women's Day celebration at the Jazz School on Addison Street in Berkeley. The group calls themselves the Hall Chamber Jazz Ensemble, and they'll be performing on Friday starting at 8 p.m. All of that information, along with other local bands, is at our website. It's kalw.org. For Cross Currents, I'm Holly Kernan.